Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, Text Number 8. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Gyanam Vasudam Vipulam Yatitad. Vairagya vijnana yutam puranam. Vairagya vijnana yutam puranam. Akhikya hi vishvasvare vishvamurte. Akyahi vishvasvara vishvamurte. Twad bhakti yogam cha mahad vimrigyam. Twad bhakti yogam cha mahad vigriyam. Sri Uddhava Uvacha Gyanam Vishuddham Viprulam Yatitad. Vairagya Vijnana Yutam Puranam. Akyahi Vishvasvara Vishvamurte. Twad bhakti yogam cha mahad vim rigyam. Shirva vacha. Gyanam vishudam vipalam yatatad. Vairagya vijnana yutam puranam. Akyahi vishvasvare vishvamurte. Tvad bhakti yogam cha mahad vimgriyam. Any more? Word for word, Sri Uddhava Uvacha. Sri Uddhava said, Gyanam, knowledge. Vishuddham, transcendental. Vipulam, extensive. Yata, just as. Etat, this. Vairagya, detachment. Vijnana, the direct perception of the truth. Yutam, including. Puranam, traditional among great philosophers. Akyahi, please explain. Vishva Ishvara, O Lord of the universe. Vishva Murte, O form of the universe. Tvat, unto you. Bhakti Yogam, loving devotional service. Cha, also. Mahat, by great souls. Vimrigyam, sought after. Translation and purport. By the followers of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Translation. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord of the universe, O form of the universe, please explain to me that process of knowledge which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth, which is transcendental, which is traditional among great spiritual philosophers. and which is traditional among great spiritual philosophers. This knowledge, sought by elevated personalities, describes loving devotional service unto your Lordship. Please repeat. Sri Uddhava said, O Lord of the universe, O form of the universe, please explain to me that process of knowledge which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth, which is transcendental and which is traditional among great spiritual philosophers. This knowledge, sought by elevated personalities, describes loving devotional service unto your Lordship. Purport. Those who are able to cross over the darkness of material existence are called Mahat, or great personalities. Secondary items like cosmic consciousness or universal control do not deviate the attention of such great souls from loving service to the Lord. Sri Uddhava desires to hear knowledge of the eternal religious principles that are the traditional aim and objective of all superior personalities. Om Agyano Tirandasya Jananjanan Salakaya Chakshuru Unmelitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Karamaya Dadanti Svabhadantikam. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances under the dust of his lotus feet. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Tamal Krishna Goswami Niti Namane. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschatari Shatarine Vanshakalpatarubhascha Kripa Sindhubhasevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shivasari, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're reading from the Spotless Purana, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen in this dark age of Kali, Kali Yuga, the age we're in now. This literature, this perfect, spotless work of historical, spiritual reference, just full of the pastimes of Krishna and spiritual information. The Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen in the dark age to give us light. The Srimad Bhagavatam is like light in this dark age. And what does light do? It dispels darkness. Wherever there's darkness, wherever there's light, darkness cannot exist. Darkness is the absence of light. So in the absence of knowledge of Krishna, we're in darkness of ignorance. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us knowledge of Krishna, of spiritual life, of bhakti, of the yoga, of devotion. And that we know the Vedas give lots of other knowledge too. But this is the cream. This is the cream of all Vedic knowledge, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we're so fortunate that the Srila Prabhupada has translated it, that the disciples of Srila Prabhupada continued the translations under his authority and auspices. And we know that they used the purports of the previous acharyas to help draw their purports, and so that their understandings and explanations would be correct. And so it's very wonderful to have this opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in a group setting. and to always remember how much Krishna loves us and that he's constantly repeating this information and giving it to us again and again. This verse here and many of the verses in this particular chapter, they sound so similar, don't they, to what we've read in Srimad Bhagavatam. Sri Uddhava said, this is the translation, O Lord of the universe, O form of the universe, please explain to me. Who else says that? Very famous. Arjuna, right? Please help me, Krishna. Please explain to me. And this is the same question we all have when we first come to the temple. When we're new, we're off the streets. Please explain to me knowledge that's superior to knowledge that I have now so that I can stop this suffering. Stop this endless cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death. And even if we don't believe in reincarnation, we know we're suffering now. But why not accept reincarnation? Just as a young child, we don't have a baby body. The baby doesn't have a baby body. He gets a bigger baby body. He gets a child's body. He gets a big child's body. He gets a young adult's body. We get an adult body. We get a middle-aged body. We're constantly changing our body, even in this lifetime. So why can't we understand? Very simple. Most devotees accept it. All devotees accept it readily, but other people need a little convincing sometimes. So these examples are there. The Bhagavatam, the Gita are there to explain. No, you take another birth. If you're not perfect at the end of this life, excuse me, and whatever your consciousness is at the end of this life, that's determining your next birth. That's going to determine your next body. What body you will be awarded or given as punishment, depending on your karma, your activity, your thoughts, deeds, and actions and desires are affecting how you live now. And how you live now is going to determine your consciousness at the time of death. So it's very important. We can't just say, well, I'll wait till the end. Maybe I'll know. I'll have a little bit of time and I can really chant then, right? No, it's going to be too late. We have to walk the walk now. You know, we have to walk the talk now. We talk about these things and we aspire to them, but it's so important that we actually carry them out. We follow the principles of religious freedom, freedom from reining in our senses now a little bit helps us to control them fully in the end. We can be in full control of our mind and body and senses. If we chant Hare Krishna, Maha Mantra, 16 rounds every day, we read for an hour every day, we come to the temple, we see the deities, we come for Mangal Arati if we can, we come to greeting. Sometimes it's not easy, we've got a ways to drive, we have so many things to do materially. But what are the things we're doing materially? They're all for Krishna, and we know they have to be dovetailed into Krishna's service. Your job. Wow. You can do a job for Krishna? Yeah. You can, whatever your profession is, you can do that as an offering to Krishna. And of course, you want to try to focus on a job that doesn't make you, you know, maybe commit crime or, treat people really horribly or, you know, have to butcher animals. You know, there's some pretty obvious, professions that devotees avoid. And, but let's say you're already in that profession to become a devotee. That's okay. You know, Krishna will help you to get out of that very negative circumstance and put you in a position where you can practice Krishna consciousness so nicely. And hasn't he done that for each one of us? Krishna has placed us in such a beautiful, wonderful, nice situation. I don't know any devotee that doesn't get that treatment. And sometimes it's very rapid. Some new bhaktas or bhaktins will come. They'll become very interested in Krishna consciousness. They'll move to the community almost immediately. It took me a couple months, and finally I got to move here. Hare Krishna, thanks for being here. Have a great day. So it's just astonishing how Krishna cares for his devotees, how he cares for everyone, even if they're not worshiping him the way devotees worship Krishna. Krishna takes care of everyone, and he provides food, he provides shelter, position, job. He keeps the universe in order. We're not suffering constant calamity, but there is just enough calamity There's just enough difficulties, bad weather, hurricane, earthquake, famine, drought, flood, that we're being reminded, don't get too comfortable here. Okay, we didn't get any flooding in Dallas. We didn't get any drought in Dallas, a little bit maybe, but we had a pretty good year. We had a mild summer. Wow, this is pretty nice. I think, you know, I can get relaxed here. I think I can be pretty happy here. If it's like this all the time, well, you know, I'm near the temple. No, even despite our nice situations, Chris is showing us, reminding us, don't try to be comfortable in this material world. We want to get out of this material world. We want to go back home, back to Godhead. Radha Kalachandri is standing right here. It's just unbelievable to think the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is right in front of us. When we take darshan, we look at him. Are we just looking at him? No, he's looking at us. And he's just saying, look, here I am. Don't you want to come and join my pastimes? Look how beautiful all this is. And it is. Krishna is incredibly beautiful. Radharani, the gopis, the gopas, the Krishna's associates, his paraphernalia, his pastimes are full of tasty nectar, nectarian pastimes of Krishna. They're so relishable and enjoyable. They're likened unto nectar. Nectar. Has anyone tasted nectar? You know, in this degraded Kali Yuga, we probably don't have anything that's even close to the incredible tasty nectar of which the Bhagavatam speaks of. But we can imagine the most tasty, sweet, relishable thing we ever drank or ate. Billions of times more, that's Krishna. That's Krishna, the enjoyment of looking at Krishna, drinking in Krishna with our eyes. We know Krishna can do that. Krishna can eat with his eyes. He can eat with his hands. He can relish with all his senses equally. And so Krishna gives us a little chance to do that too, right? We don't have the complete way. We can't do it like Krishna does it, but we can drink in beautiful things with our eyes, right? So the most beautiful thing is Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. And the sooner we give up trying to enjoy the material things that are out there, thinking that they'll bring us pleasure, that looking at that will make us happy, that associating with this person or that enjoyment will make us happy. No. The material world is a place of constant disappointment, sadness, and decay. Decay, constantly decaying. No matter how wonderful or beautiful your body is now, it will not look the same in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 20 years, 50 years. It is going to go away. The most beautiful women of the 1930s in beauty pageants, look at them today. Well, most of them are deceased. Go to the 1950s. Look at them today. They're old. They're not attractive anymore. This is the way of this material world. Don't try to get lost in the enjoyment, in the beauty, in the aspect of things that are temporary, especially when we have this higher knowledge. We're so lucky to read Uddhava's request to Krishna to explain to me the process of knowledge, which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth. Wow. There are things we can do now that will bring us knowledge of detachment and direct perception of truth. In the previous verses, we heard, you're going to be able to see Krishna face to face. Actually, Srila Prabhupada says this in the Bhagavad Gita. You're going to be able to see Krishna face to face. Amazing. It's said that when you first see Krishna, you first perceive him by the sound of his ankle bells. You hear that. And then you begin to smell Krishna before you see him and you pass out. And then Krishna wakes you up and his face is right in your face when you wake up and you get to see Krishna. So it's very beautiful to prepare ourselves now and to begin more sincerely following the process that we're going to hear about, that we've already heard about, that we know about, that we're practicing. But we've got to hear it again and again and again. Have this repeated so many times so that we really believe it, so that it goes in deeply, and we begin to practice more sincerely. We're practicing now. We're practicing sincerely. At least in my case, sometimes I'm sincere and sometimes I'm struggling. So how do we have more of the sincere time and less of the struggle time? By repeatedly hearing and chanting. So, Uddhava has asked this question. please explain to me that process of knowledge which automatically brings detachment and direct perception of the truth, which is transcendental. In this case, refers to, okay, there's knowledge, which is material knowledge, there's spiritual knowledge, and then there's transcendental knowledge. He's asking about the kind of knowledge, vigyan, which actually gives us perception of ourselves in the spiritual world, who we are in relationship to Krishna. And which, that's what's meant by transcendental here, vigyan. And tell me that which is about this knowledge, which is also traditional among great spiritual philosophers. Wow, it's a traditional thing. Great spiritual seekers, great spiritual philosophers, they have this in common. They want to know about the supreme absolute truth. They're tired of being cheated. They don't want to go to cheating yogis, to cheating providers of spiritual knowledge. There's so many cheaters out there. And you have to listen to the proper source. You have to go to the proper translation of these literatures. You have to hear from authorized personalities that actually understand the topic in the first place, which is what Srila Prabhupada did. And Srila Prabhupada's disciples and followers are now taking up that knowledge and understanding it in a way that they can give it to others. And that's the ultimate goal, to learn it ourselves, right, and to give it to others. So Krishna or Uddhava is further describing this knowledge. Okay, it's transcendental. It's traditional among great spiritual philosophers. And this knowledge is sought by elevated personalities because it describes loving devotional service unto you, Krishna, unto your lordship. That's the secret. It describes loving devotional service. That is what we want to do right now in this lifetime. We don't want to do devotional service or do activities for ourselves. We do have to do jobs, make money, you know, take care of situations. But we can actually do that as devotional service. So we want to purify ourselves and our consciousness so that we're not actually still doing it for our own pleasure. And this takes time because we're still doing these things and they're rote and we've done it for years. But we have to recognize and we have to dovetail it more and understand, no, I'm doing this job for Krishna. I'm taking care of my family for Krishna. I'm doing this service at the temple for Krishna. It's not just to get a little money or get a little credit or get a little attention or get some kind of honor and distinction. This desire for honor and distinction is very strong, and it's one of the last snares that we have to overcome. To actually do devotional service without a desire for any honor or distinction, just to be an extremely humble servant and not have anyone know even what you've done, but we know that Krishna knows. Krishna's in our heart, so he sees everything. Krishna's everywhere. He's in all directions. He's in everything. So Krishna knows. And we can be happy in that. We can do our knowledge happy in the fact that Krishna knows. I chant my rounds. I follow the regulator principles. I go out. I try to give Krishna a little bit to other people. I try to give Krishna a lot to other people. But I don't have to broadcast that. If it becomes known, it becomes known. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's the higher levels of spiritual consciousness we want to develop. That we're not just doing things for honor and distinction so that others will see, oh, here's what I've done. No, it's a matter of internalizing it more and more and more so that we're doing things on the outside, but internally we're in constant bliss, in constant knowledge that we're doing everything for Krishna and everything is a setup for more service, for doing the service today, for doing more service tomorrow. And so, that's loving devotional service. We're doing devotional service, but how do we make it more loving? How can we turn what we're doing and make it more loving for Krishna? By associating with advanced devotees and seeing how they perform Krishna consciousness. You say, well, I don't live at a temple. I don't have any devotees around me. You have the example of Srila Prabhupada, and you have his books that he translated, and those books are his purports. And Prabhupada is there. Srila Prabhupada is there in his purports. If you read Prabhupada speaking. It is Prabhupada speaking to you. If you read what he wrote, these purports. Now you might say, well, I heard that Prabhupada said Krishna dictated these to me. Yes, he did. Krishna dictated to Prabhupada what to say. But Prabhupada was being very humble and acknowledging that the only way anything that is really right and proper that is done in this material world is with the help of Krishna, with the help of Guru. Prabhupada gave complete credit to his spiritual master for all that he had done. He said, the only credit I get is that I didn't change anything. I followed in the footsteps of my spiritual master, and Srila Prabhupada inherited everything from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, because he was the one true follower of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Maybe a couple others were close, but Srila Prabhupada really was the one that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur knew would actually take up his order. The order to go to the West and preach was given to other disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and they did not take it up. They did not take it seriously. They did not think they could do it. And they begged their Guru Maharaj, please Maharaj, I cannot do this. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, that is all right. Abhay Babu, he will go. Abhay Charan, Bhaktivedanta Swami, he will go. Of course, he wasn't Bhaktivedanta Swami then, but he was Abhay Charan. And he said, Abhay will go. He was Bhaktivedanta. And so Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master knew that Srila Prabhupada would go and spread Krishna consciousness to the West and do something that is unheard of in practically all history, that Srila Prabhupada could go out and do this and spread Krishna consciousness the way he did and have so much faith. And despite so many tests from Krishna, Krishna tested Srila Prabhupada, yes, heart attacks on the boat, difficulties coming here. It didn't happen overnight. Prabhupada was 69 years old, 68, 69 when he came to America. Unbelievable to come at that age and do this. And those of us who are in our 40s or 50s, well, this is an astonishing thing. I think that an older gentleman could do this. But Prabhupada had total faith in the holy names of Krishna, in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, and he wanted to give this to others. And he knew that Krishna was the force behind his abilities. And he was constantly in a loving, spiritual, devotional demeanor and mood of humility and giving Krishna to others in a bona fide way, in the proper way. So it's just so amazing to think about and to remember this about Srila Prabhupada, and to remember we should always associate with Prabhupada. We should read his books every day. He translated so many books, so many nice purports, so many nice things are explained in a way that we can understand them for our age, right? Yeah, for our age. For the people of this Kali Yuga, where we're at right now, where our consciousness is right now, Prabhupada was able to explain Bhagavad Gita with Krishna's help, with his spiritual master's help, in a way just suited especially for us, especially for you. Yeah, for everyone, just especially for you. There are things in the purports that will reach out to you and grab you, and they will affect you deeply, and they will be things that you read and you'll go, wow, that's amazing. How is this affecting me like this? This is a question I always had. This is something deep inside. I want it answered. This is some deep problem I have, and I'm receiving an answer for it. How do we control ourselves for real? How do we actually do that? That is an amazing thing, and the answers are clear. The answers are there in Gita and Bhagavatam. You follow the regulative principles. Even though you don't do it perfectly at first, you follow, and that gives you the power to follow better later. You chant. Okay, we don't chant perfectly, but you chant and you keep chanting. And pretty soon, the chanting purifies your consciousness, and it increases in potency. And your ability to chant and hear nicely increases, and it purifies you slowly. The purificatory process takes time. But the purificatory process is called anartha nivritti. It's the removal of unwanted things, anartas, from the heart. The dirtiness that surrounds the soul, that prevents us from seeing in the mirror of the heart. It's said to be like a mirror that's covered with dust and dirt and caked with grimy, dirty, ugly things. It's baked on hard. And so we have to chisel at it, chisel, clean it. When Srila Prabhupada first engaged Jamuna Devi, her name was Joan, and she was at 22nd Avenue. And he engaged her in cleaning the pots, not only cleaning them, but getting the black off the bottom of the pot, right? Because the black gets burned on there from being used in cooking. And so she took, I want to say, 3-4 hours it took her of scrubbing to get all the black off, and she got it off finally and showed it to Srila Prabhupada. He was so happy that this is the Vaishnava standard. This is the devotee standard of cleanliness. No black. Get all the black off the pot so that you can use it nicely in Krishna's service. And so this is what we have to do. We have to clean our hearts, clean the dirtiness in our heart, which is there for millennia. It's been caked on for so many billions of lifetimes. So it's not going to be necessarily an easy job. It can become easy if we make it easy for ourselves, but we don't usually make it easy for ourselves. We usually make things hard for ourselves because we don't want to give up anger, greed, lust, the gates of hell. We've constantly been going through those gates because of our attachment to those activities, sinful activities, and going down to the hellish planets, coming back up, maybe going to the heavenly planets for a while, enjoying, oh, this is so great, mid-level planet, blowing it again, going back down to hell. So enough of the cycle of birth, old age, disease, and death, suffering mercilessly, hands of karma. Karma is so vicious, so proficient in dishing out the reactions that we deserve for our sinful activities. It is coming. You may beat the rap with the police or the local authority, but you will not beat the rap with Krishna and his material energy, which dishes out the karma for our good and bad behavior. And is good behavior something we want? Yeah, but ultimately we want to rise even above good behavior. We want to get to the Shuddha Sattva platform, spiritual, transcendental, complete goodness, which is karma-free. We don't even want the karma from good behavior. We want pure, transcendental, spiritual activities, and they are superior to goodness, which gets us to heaven. But we don't want heaven. We want to go back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. So the purport discusses that those who are able to cross over the darkness of material existence are called Mahat, or great personalities. They're known as Mahatmas, right? Mahatma. Mahatma Gandhi. Gandhi was given this honorific title in front of his name, Mahatma, because he is a great personality. That wasn't actually his name. It was an honorable title given to him, Mahatma Gandhi. And he was a great personality, but he was not exactly a pure devotee of Krishna. He didn't really understand bhakti yoga. He was a great follower of Hinduism and the Hindu scriptures, and we know he loved Bhagavad Gita. So he had some wonderful characteristics, but he was lacking in other ways. So Mahatma is kind of word like genius. Sometimes genius is thrown around a little too easily. But the great personalities, the Mahatmas, like Srila Prabhupada, like Srila Prabhupada's followers. There's one follower of Srila Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada gave him the name, Mahatma Das. Not just an honorific, but actually he gave him that name, Mahatma Das. And now Mahatma Das just visited us a couple weeks ago. We were fortunate to have him there, and we thank him again for coming. And he's an initiating spiritual master now. And his example of his life is amazing. He travels. He gives Krishna to everyone. He helps devotees with difficulties. He gives devotees, various different kinds of seminars and lectures and workshops to work on chanting Hare Krishna, to work on improving our relationships with other devotees. And this is the real bottom line of who and what we are. We are meant to be loving devotees, loving with each other and loving with others. And just think, if we're not loving with the devotees right now, the people we know, the other devotees that we know, how are we going to be loving when we go up to Jug Eyes and Mud Eyes in the outside world and we try to tell them to chant and they react with vicious anger against us? Haridas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, they reacted with love. The first time they ran away because the rogues were very violent. And they said, okay, we got to plan. And so Nityananda, he made an arrangement a second time to see these rogues, these thieves. And so when Lord Nityananda Prabhu saw them, he said, chant Hare Krishna. One of the thieves, one of the rogues, Jagai, I believe, was a little bit more touched. But Madai picked up the piece of pot, and struck Lord Nityananda Prabhu, drew blood from his face. I may have them mixed up. My apologies if I do. But Lord Nityananda saw this as an opportunity to save the two most sinful men in all the worlds, and especially in Nadia, in Mayapur at that time. So he wanted to show the wonderful quality, the spiritual superiority of bhakti to everyone. When they see that Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and bhakti turn these rascals, murderous, rapist, thieving rascals, drunkards, turn them into pure devotees, chanting Hare Krishna and associating with the devotees, wow, people would be really amazed. And so Lord Nityananda Prabhu went to these rogues, these rascals, and turned them into his disciples. They offended Lord Nityananda Prabhu gravely. They went to Lord Chaitanya, please, you know, you've forgiven my brother. Why not me? You, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you must go to Nityananda and beg his forgiveness. And this was all the arrangement of Krishna and Lord Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to deliver Jagai and Madai. And in such a way that they would give us the example. Now you go out and you go to Jagais and Madais and expect to be attacked. Keep your body and soul together. Don't let them kill you. But give them this mercy. And to do that, think how humble you must be. They react with anger. Do you react with anger back against them? Isn't that the way that most of the time that's the way I behave? If someone's angry at me, I get angry back. If someone is harsh with me, I'm harsh back. So the actual way to treat people is to learn not to react to them the way that they're treating you, but to actually be tolerant and patient and loving and humble and just hear them out. Let them blast whatever anger or nonsense they want to say. And then when you can speak, well, here's what I want to say. Here's what it really is. And people like that, they're affected very strongly when they're so used to being angry to other people and getting anger back that that's what they wanted. And they wanted to do, they're being angry to you just to make you angry. And if you don't get angry and you respond to them with kindness and love, they're actually, sometimes they're astonished. They can't speak. They're just like, they're blown away. Here's someone who's setting an example of how to really be a spiritual person. This person's unique because most people I get angry at get angry back. But this person did not get angry. This person did not respond in kind or with even 10 times worse, right? That's usually what happens, right? You know, you get mad at somebody and they get twice as mad at you. Then you get four times as mad at them. Then they get eight times as mad at you. And so what's the use? Then everybody's just mad. Then pretty soon guns are out or fists are out or rocks are out. And in this age, it's, you know, people just go right to the ultimate, you know, horribleness of murder. It just, that's it. Well, I pull out a gun. You're upsetting me. I have a right to kill you. You upset me. I can kill you. It's nonsense. It's just utter nonsense. And it's because of a lack of spiritual understanding, a lack of people understanding the ultimate goal of life, which is to become a loving servant, to perform loving devotional service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in this very life. It's not something we prepare for later. No, now it is something we'll do for our next births. We'll continue to do devotional service until we're perfected and we go back home, back to Godhead, where we'll do this in a purified way, in our swaroop, in our original spiritual position. But we have to do it now. We have to start now to perform devotional service in a loving way, to purify our consciousness, and so that we can give Krishna to others. And when you give Krishna to others, you are the most dear person to Krishna. No one is more dear to Krishna than the person that preaches the glories of pure loving devotional service to Krishna. Amazing, isn't it? Because Radharani is pleased. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Radharani. And Radharani wants us back. She wants to bring the fallen souls, like a loving mother, bring them back to the love of the Father. She knows that's why they're suffering. They've turned away from the Father. There's no need to stay out. The Father's house is ready. And there's a massive feast laid out for you. There's a comfortable, warm bed just waiting for you. Why not go there? This is your, not only is it there for you, it's your birthright. It's your inheritance as a spirit soul, as an eternal associate of Krishna. It's actually your real spiritual existence. It's your real existence to be in a loving situation with Krishna where there's no anxiety. There's no anger. There's no unhappiness. There's no suffering. You know, there's no hunger, thirst, disease, famine, you know, unkind words. There's no unkind words in Vaikuntha. There are no isn't that amazing to think of? We pretty much have nothing but unkind words for each other, thrown upon us, right? I'm speaking about myself. You know, it's just to think, there's a place where it's not like that at all. It's starkly absent. No anxiety, no unkindness, just pure love, pure loving relationships, unlimitedly, forever, for eternity, for infinity, eternal, transcendental, loving pastimes of Krishna. The pastimes we have in Bhagavatam and in that even depicted in the paintings in the temple room, they're just a tiny little fraction. Tiny fraction of Krishna's unlimited pastimes. That means Krishna's pastimes are always expanding. Krishna's energy is always expanding. Krishna's always expanding. Krishna doesn't even know the limits of his own power. Krishna has no idea the actual limits of his own incredible spiritual power and potency. And Krishna says, even though I don't even know the limits of that power, when you chant the name Radha, even I don't know what is the limit of the spiritual potency and pleasure of saying the name Radha. The pleasure potency that's within the name Radha, even Krishna cannot be calculated. It's not calculatable. And the devotees don't sit around in Vaikuntha trying to calculate what is the limit of Krishna. It's unlimited. It's always there. And it's there for us. It's our birthright. Isn't that interesting to know if you had an inheritance somewhere? You know, you got lost from your parents or something happened but somewhere in a bank, there's a lawyer that has some documents. You're due to inherit billions of dollars. Well, how do I find him? How do I know this? Not only do we have an inheritance of billions of dollars, it's way beyond dollars and cents. It's not even material. Our inheritance is beyond material. The opulence of the Hare Krishna movement is beyond any material calculation. We all know, we come every day. You walk by the restaurant and you look inside right there. I can see it now. The line for the buffet line. All these different items of prasadam are laid out for you. Just Krishna did all that for you, that you can walk in and have prasadam. All these guests that come, Krishna did all of that for them. The devotees prepared it. The devotees have to go out and raise the money. Okay, they got a little money, they can buy vegetables. They got to drive and buy the vegetables. Abhimanyu Prabhu, he gets in a van, he goes to three or four different places to get the best vegetables, to get the nicest produce, brings it back, puts it in the cooler. Some devotees come, they do the preparation work, they do the cut up. So many devotees do so many things. And then the devotees cook it. They cook it with love and skill into nice, tasty preparations that are actually And then they're offered to Krishna with love. And then they're placed out for anyone to walk up and eat. 6 days a week, two times a day, lunch and dinner, for hours. The prasadam is there. And it doesn't just sit there and get warm in the warmers. The cooks now stay there and cook throughout the day and put out fresh prasad all the time. And that's just the mercy of prasadam. Think about all the other ways Krishna helps us with shelter, money. So many things that Krishna does to protect us, to help us, to save us. How many of us have missed out on car accidents by a hair? Didn't get in that car accident. Didn't have that brick fall on our head, but the next guy maybe got hit. You know, so many ways Krishna has mitigated our karma. You know, honestly, I don't feel like I was still going to still be on the planet if I hadn't been become a devotee. So all this is extra for me. Krishna gives and gives and gives. Sometimes when we're at a big feast, after a nice festival, we've chanted, danced, we've done nice things for Krishna, we've done Abhishek or for the various festivals, and then when you sit down to the feast and you look around and there's hundreds of devotees honoring this amazing feast, and you just think, this opulence is unlimited. Who else gets this kind of opulence? Who else gets to enjoy this kind of lifestyle, this kind of food? We know it's prasadam. Other people don't. But they may say, well, but I can go buy a better meal than that. You can't. You can't go buy a better meal than you can get every day right here. And even the Mahaprasadam comes out. It's free. Free. Just line up and get it. Be the right place, right time, right? Free prasadam. Excuse me. You're hungry? Do you want a plate? The devotees don't say, how much money you got? You know, we do charge at the restaurant because that's, people value it more if they pay for it, right? And we just say, come get it. And we just have the homeless lined up, right? We wouldn't have people driving from Plano, Irving, Houston, Houston? New York to come here and get the prasad that Kalachandri's restaurant cooks and serves. So, it's okay that sometimes they pay a little money for it. Sometimes we pay a little money. That's okay. Krishna gave us the money. He doesn't mind, you know. We shouldn't mind. We have to pay for a little prasadam once in a while. We should be giving some of our income to Krishna. Even if we don't have income, we should give some of our money to Krishna monthly, weekly, yearly. Do something. Show some regard for Krishna. For Pete's sake, he's giving you everything. Can you give a little bit back to him? That's all you got to do. 10%, 20%. Is it that hard? Are you going to be without? No, Krishna's going to make sure you still have everything you need. And you don't give it so you get more back. This gospel of giving to God so God will give you 10 times more. It's just cheating. Because those guys want you to give to them. They get 10 times more. They're living in million-dollar mansions and driving half-million-dollar cars, I suppose. But in their hearts, they want to give God lovingly to people in as best they can. What's wrong if they get rich from it? I guess that's some of their thoughts. But we don't want that cheating mentality. We're not in this to get rich. We're not in it to live a big lifestyle. We're not in this to have lots of money and always get to fly first class and always have people honoring us. That's not the goal. The goal is to live simply and give Krishna sincerely. We don't need all the accoutrements of a fabulous material lifestyle. We just don't. It's not going to make your life any better. You know, you live simply. Live simply. Srila Prabhupada stayed in a palatial house. I think it was one of the Birla children, family members, giant house. The first room of their house is bigger than most people's houses, you know. That wasn't even the living room. That was just the drawing room. You come in. So Prabhupada stayed there a day or two. And then the next day he was in Mayapur. And a couple days later he went to Mayapur and he was staying in a grass hut, the thatched hut that they first built on the Mayapur property. And Srila Prabhupada said, I like this better. Said, this is more sattvic. This is more spiritual. This is better for us to live this way than to live in some palatial house. Prabhupada could live palatially. He didn't. He lived simply. If you see Prabhupada's rooms all over the world in the temples that he had, he didn't pick the biggest room out. He didn't say line it with the best bed and linens and sheets and make sure I get a first class ticket. He never said that. But sometimes Prabhupada did fly first class. Sometimes he flew coach. You can see in the films, Prabhupada wasn't always in first class. Later on, his disciples, we want to give you a Rolls Royce to drive in Srila Prabhupada. We've borrowed it. They didn't waste money on buying it, right? They found a way to give Prabhupada the best that wasn't a frivolous, useless waste of money, but was still a nice thing to offer to Srila Prabhupada. So this is what we should do. We shouldn't think we have to have millions or billions of dollars. Oh, no, I'll use it for Krishna. Yeah, right. Come on. You don't need that much money to use it for Krishna. What does Krishna say he wants? Offer me with love a leaf, a flower, or a little water. And by leaf, he means Tulsi, and by water, he means Ganges. That's all he wants? Yes. Krishna came and appeared as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just because Advaita Acharya offered him Tulsi leaves and Ganga Jal. Wow. That's some potent stuff. So we can offer that to Krishna now. Wow, we offer it to Krishna now. He'll be so happy. Maybe he'll give me billions of dollars. No, I don't want billions of dollars anymore. I want pure loving devotion to Krishna's lotus feet. And to get pure loving devotion to Krishna's lotus feet, you have to perform pure loving devotion to Krishna's devotees, to Krishna's followers, to the disciples and the spiritual masters and the disciples of the Hare Krishna movement, of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, of which ISKCON, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the powerful moving force in the world now to spread Krishna consciousness. That's the movement you want to be in. They have the devotees that you want to serve, that if you serve, you will not be cheated, you know. You will not be taken for a ride by a fake practitioner. Okay, some of the spiritual masters fell down. Why? Because Krishna had to rectify them. They didn't stay in a fallen condition. They fell down. It became known if they were having problems. And that's the same for us. Krishna's let us know what our problems are, right? We all know. By this time, don't we have a pretty good idea what our problems are? Let's work on them, you know? Instead of trying to maintain some idea of happiness on the side, it's not going to happen. It's not going to make you happy. It's just that which keeps us bound. It keeps us shackled to the material world. And it prevents us from getting the full benefit of loving devotional service from fully understanding. And in fact, the more you're sinful, that destroys the desire for spiritual self-realization. You know, sinful activity destroys the desire. What's the most important thing to have in spiritual life? The desire to love Krishna, to have the desire to understand these topics, to have the desire to chant Hare Krishna and follow the regular principles. Desire is everything. Longing, loyam, having a strong desire for it. That's the only qualification for getting it, that you want it so much that you've given up the desire for anything else, that you don't want anything but Krishna, but loving service to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in the spiritual mat. That's how you get loving devotion to Radha and Krishna, by serving the spiritual master sincerely. They offered Srila Prabhupada a cake. Remember this? It may have been in New Vrindavan when they cooked this giant cake. And they offered it to Srila Prabhupada for his Vyas Puja, and there's candles on it. They said, okay, Prabhupada, before you blow out the candles, you have to make a wish. You know, maybe that's a Western thing. Prabhupada probably knew. Maybe they do that in India. I don't know. But it's very popular, right? Everyone's done it. Everyone's made a wish, blow out the candles. And they say, don't tell anyone what your wish was or you won't get it. So they said to Prabhupada, make a wish, blow out. So Prabhupada makes a wish and blows out your candles. And somebody goes, Srila Prabhupada, what did you wish for? And Srila Prabhupada said, what I wish for every time, pure devotional service. That's what Prabhupada wants all the time. He just wants pure devotional service to the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. Isn't that amazing? He didn't think, oh, I want $1 million so I can build this temple, do that. Prabhupada's way above all that. All these things came because Prabhupada had that desire to purely serve the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna did everything else. Everything came because of Prabhupada's pure desire and his pure love for Krishna. And then it became a reciprocal thing, you know? It's amazing. Why do we get Radha and Krishna? Because we get a spiritual master. But why did we get the spiritual master? Because we got Radha and Krishna. Radha Kalachanji give us Guru. Guru gives us Radha Kalachanji. Which came first? Chicken or the egg? But it doesn't matter. Because once you see Radha Kalachanji and you get a little regard for him, then maybe you get Guru. Or maybe you get Guru and then you get to see Radha Kalachanji. Either way, you get into that reciprocation. The Guru is giving us Krishna. Krishna is giving us the Guru. And that means, by Krishna giving us the Guru, that means we follow the instructions of Guru, right? We don't just say, I got Guru, I'm done, it's all over. Now I can get Radha and Krishna. No. You have to follow the instructions of the spiritual master in a loving way. You know, beating your brain. How do I follow? Am I following right? Am I doing this right? Talking to other devotees. What's wrong with this? I did this, I did that. It's not, is it right, it's wrong. How does this work? That's being a devotee. That's always questioning our motives, our behavior, our understandings so that it improves. It improves, it improves, it improves. Because even though we get this knowledge and we think, I read it, I got it, we don't really have it. Not like the way Srila Prabhupada had it, right? He was a living embodiment of the knowledge. Bhakti Vedanta. The Vedanta of loving devotion. He was an incarnation of it. So he could give a succinct, perfect answer in one sentence that would not only answer your question, but would give you the open your heart and allow it to go in, right? Astonishing. And his books are there. I don't understand people that don't that I feel like don't understand the Siddhanta today. The folks that are, you know, Ritviks or want to go to a different spiritual master than Prabhupada. I don't understand it. Why not? Don't you just read Srila Prabhupada's books? The superiority of what he's saying is so obvious. And listen to his lectures. Watch the video of Prabhupada speaking, talking. Watch the remembrances of the disciples that were with him in the early days. And they tell stories of Srila Prabhupada. And it's fresh. These were made years ago now. You know, they were not made up stories, not lies, you know. They told it on the spot, you know. Interviewed. Here are my top memories of Srila Prabhupada. And the devotees share those things. They're so powerful. They're so potent. One Mataji, Mother Mula Prakriti, she did research. She went and spoke to Vrindavan Basis. And they're now all gone. She spoke to God Brothers of Prabhupada. She spoke to people that knew Prabhupada. And she got these amazing stories of who Prabhupada was spiritually. It was coming out even then. And you can watch her being interviewed on tape in this live, you know, video. She's telling these stories of how Srila Prabhupada used to live at Radha Damodar Mandir. And there was a devotee that lived on the wall right next to it. And he would hear Srila Prabhupada late at night cleaning the courtyard and crying out, begging for mercy. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, please give me your mercy that I can chant, that I can spread this movement. You know, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, please Rupa Goswami. It was right outside Rupa Goswami's Bhajan Kutir and Samadhi. He would beg and plead and cry while he cleaned and in the courtyard and beg, please give me this mercy. Give me your mercy. Give me the ability to preach Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada knew what he had to do. It was years in preparation, right? And then finally he came. And thank goodness, thank Krishna, thank Prabhupada that he came and did all this for us. For you, for me, for everyone individually, this movement exists. It's not just for society at large. It's for every individual soul. This movement exists. Isn't that astonishing? It has that potency. So I went over a little bit. It's 8:40. A quick question, comment. Okay, the question is, how do we actually realize our what again? Sorry. I'm sorry. Ability to love and give love. And really understand what we're capable of. And then try to give that to Krishna. Yeah, I think I was going to try to find a verse in the Gita that would answer it. Because then that would be authoritative, right? But you hit on something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is how do we really do things in Krishna consciousness? Like, for me, everything's mostly rote, right? Go to bed early, get up early, chant, read, wash, clean yourself, do some service. I have a couple things a week I do. That's it. I help out a little bit here, but I'm not maximized. You know, there's a lot more I could do, but it's like, how do we really understand, you know, what it is we're supposed to do, or how do we really do it? Maybe it's like, I don't know. That may not be your question, but I think that's sort of the answer of how do we really love Krishna? How do we really, it's all part of the process. It's all part of, doing the basics. Like somebody asked Radhana Swami, His Holiness Radhana Swami, they said, how are you so humble? I mean, when I was in a kirtan and I accidentally stepped on his feet, because it was going back and forth and we were running, you know, and so we ran and I ran right up and just landed right on his feet. I said, oh my gosh, Maharaj, I'm so sorry. I offer my obeisances. Please forgive me. He just, you know, had this perfect expression of calm, loving peacefulness. He wasn't mad. He didn't look like, you, how could you, why did you step my, you killed my feet. He didn't say that. So he was that kind of personality. He was not, did not get angry. I can testify personally. And this is in probably 96, 95, 97, 98. Did not. And so they said, how are you, how is it you're like this? He said, well, at first, when to be humble, you just have to be humble. You just have to act humble. Said, being something is being it, acting, you know, and okay, acting denotes drama or faking it. But in a way he was saying, yeah, fake it till you make it. Even if you don't feel humble and you're not really humble, at least be humble or act humble, and then you will actually be humble, is what he said. Be humble, act humble, then you will actually be humble. So that's kind of like what it is for devotees. Be a devotee, act like a devotee, then you will actually become a devotee. You know what I mean? Just do the things that Srila Prabhupada told us to do, our spiritual master tells us to do. And the more you do it, the more you'll realize how to do it as loving offering to Krishna, instead of just doing it as an act, or doing it because you have to, or doing it because you just want to get it out of the way so you can have your mind free to do some other nonsense, right? I get my rounds done, then I can do anything. Then I can think about all these other things, you know, these bad things. I can do any damn thing I want. Prabhupada just so succinctly and perfectly showed us that he understood our minds, because he is a spiritual master. He understood us better than we understand ourselves. There, I have finished my rounds. Now I can do any damn thing I want. He was being sarcastic. He was parodying. He was showing, that's what we think. As soon as I put my beads down and I'm done chanting 16 rounds, out of the way, turn on the TV. Hey, there's a movie I want to see. Oh, this is some stupid book I want to read. So I think that's the answer, is that you just continue to do what you're doing. But the more we do it in a pure, as we get more purified, and as we get to realize more things about this purificatory process, the more we get purified, the more we actually do it for Krishna. Like we start to actually do it with the right desire, for the right reason, or we also get more craving for it, longing. We get more of a longing to do it, because we long for the mercy of Radha and Krishna and their pastimes more than we want to be part of the material world, material pastimes. That's as good as I can answer, you know, that we just have to do what we're already doing. Because this is hard to understand. Maybe you can help me with it. Chanting is both the means and the end. We're chanting Hare Krishna so that we can chant Hare Krishna. Get your mind around that one. Okay, that means we're not really chanting Hare Krishna right now? Yes, no, you're chanting and you're getting spiritual benefit. But there will come a time that you will actually chant Hare Krishna, right? That you will chant and tears will burst out of your eyes, that you will have to control yourself. You will have to engage in a superhuman effort to control yourself for not just totally freaking out in love of Krishna so that you can preach. That's what Srila Prabhupada had to do. He was at beyond Uttama. Uttama. So he had to come, but he would come down to the Madhyam platform to preach and to be Srila Prabhupada. But he was still with Krishna always. So sometimes it would slip out, right? So, but for us, you know, I'm never like, I don't ever have to try hard to control my desire to lose it for Radha and Krishna. No, that's not my problem. So one day it will be that you will be so in love when you hear the holy name, you'll know that it is non-different from Krishna, not just accept it, you know, in a logical way, but you'll actually know it spiritually and you'll feel it that you're associating with Krishna just as if Krishna were in front of you, as Krishna's form was in front of you. Wow, that's pretty amazing that Krishna is just as much in his holy name as he is if Krishna were to come from Vaikuntha and appear in front of us instantly. It's the same. Krishna is his holy name. But because of our coverings and our material inebrities and all the material dirt still on our heart, you know, I can't perceive that the holy name is Krishna. But it is. So, you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's why he would go out and chant. And he would just taste the nectar and the bliss would flow and they would just drink in the bliss for hours. They'd have kirtan at night in Srivas Thakur's house. And for a long time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, no one ever saw him do kirtan. So it's a little mysterious. Ooh, you know, Nimai of Nadia, he's become Gauranga Chaitanya. And so nobody knew. And then when they marched on the Chan Kazi's house, everybody was, wow, we're going to get to see him do kirtan, Lord Chaitanya do kirtan in the streets in public, right? And so the word spread like wildfire and people started getting ready. They decorated their houses. They cleaned up. They got their best clothes on. Lord Chaitanya had said, if you bring a torch, you can join me. Tell your servants to come too, and they bring torches. So everybody had torches, and they all came. And the town of Nadia's population swelled thousands and thousands more because the demigods came down in forms that they could be part of that just to see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan. Even the demigods wanted to see it. Because he'd been doing it in the house. But to get a chance to be part of that display, to see it and to be part of it and to chant in it. And the devotees that were chanting with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everybody was in unlimited bliss and ecstasy. And they were all manifesting different ecstatic symptoms, ecstatic things. Some were hugging trees, crying uncontrollably, hugging each other, you know, and ready to do anything. The tiniest command of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know. So he said, to Chan Kazi's house, you know, because they went around all Nadia, right? They went around Mayapur and chanted everywhere. And everybody was in so much bliss, they'd forgotten that the real purpose of that giant kirtan was to go to Chan Kazi's house. So Lord Chaitanya said, okay, let's make way to... So there was an advanced party that got there. And they thought, it's time to tear the place up. And in the spiritual bliss, they started to destroy his gardens, his outhouses. What did Chan Kazi do? He was cowering upstairs with the women in their most protected area of the house, the women's rooms. So he was hiding. And so you can just imagine, I'm getting off track, the spiritual bliss that's the devotees were tasting that that it's so tasty and relishable that Krishna wants to do that. And so that's why he appears as Lord Chaitanya, because he wants to taste the bliss that his devotees have of chanting his names. Isn't that astonishing? He's like, wait a minute, Krishna's word. He's the most rasic person. He's the most incredible relisher of all the rasas, right? He's Rasaraj. He's the king of all rasas. The king. There's no rasa. He isn't superior. He's the king of the rasas. He tastes all the rasas. And yet he sees, look at them. They're chanting my names. They're getting more pleasure than I have. I have to come and taste this pleasure too. And so Krishna is so kind that he appears as Lord Chaitanya. And then from doing that, he says, I open it up to everyone. Everyone can chant my names. Everyone can chant Hare Krishna and come taste the nectar of the storehouse of pure love of God. It's broken wide open by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. And so that's what we'll taste one day. But right now we're still tasting, you know, it's bitter candy, right? It's bitter. It's bitter because we're still diseased, right? So we don't want to chant. It's not as tasty as it will be, right? Once we eat the sugar candy and we get rid of our jaundice, then we eat the sugar candy and go, oh my God, this is really sweet, right? But I can't. I'm talking about myself. I can't taste it yet. I chant. It's a little tasty. Then I'm like, oh, man, I'm really mad about that. I'm mad about this. I don't like that. I don't like, you know, the mind comes back in. Bring the mind back. It's okay. The mind is always going to wander. Bring it back. The mind is like, you know, you did 8 rounds. Isn't that enough? You did 12 rounds. Take a break. You'll do the other 4 later. Yeah, right. It's a lie. Never listen to that mind, right? He's a rascal. Aren't they? Our mind is a rascal. Just a total out and out rascal. He's your best friend, your worst enemy. He's a rascal or he's a devotee. It's up to us what we make our mind, right? So anyway, long answer to a short question. I'm sorry. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.